Hello and welcome to Minor Recs. I'm Charlie, and today I'm joined by Liz, Elizabeth, and Joel. And we're going to be talking about gardening today. Not all of us are professional gardeners or even talented amateurs, but we all enjoy getting our hands a little bit dirty. And we have a lot of great resources for people who want to get started or want to hone their skills a little bit better here at the library. Let's start just by talking about our experiences with gardening. Elizabeth, what drew you to gardening and what would you like to do?
I would say the start of it is that I have a very nurturing personality. And so I just like to find out if I can start something from little and make it grow. And so that's where it comes from. And then I plant things and see if I can make a little baby plant into a big, beautiful plant. But then there's the really beautiful thing of planting vegetables or fruit and growing it into food that you can then feed to your friends and family. And that's like the biggest appeal for me. So I started to want to do like a vegetable garden when I moved into a space where that was something that I could do. So my dad helped me set up a vegetable garden. It just kind of went from there. And being the library-minded person I am, I researched how the best way to grow these plants and get an abundance out of them was. And I've been kind of running with it ever since. And it's been 5 or 6 years since I really started doing it. And I've experimented with it in various configurations, either in garden beds and in containers ever since.
Very cool. Are there particular foods that are easy to grow for you?
Well, just like everybody else, like one of the first things I started with was tomatoes and cucumbers. Mm. And I can really get those tomatoes and cucumbers going. But one of the things that I learned, and something that a lot of people may have heard of but not really known how to try, is the concept of companion planting, which I am happy to talk about because it super excites me. And I always am ecstatic to report that it works. And what I plant with my tomatoes and cucumbers is on one side of my tomatoes, I plant basil. And then I plant my tomatoes, and then I plant marigolds in between, and then I plant my cucumbers, and they grow like gangbusters, just like crazy. The marigolds end up just being very pretty, but also my guinea pigs eat them, and so it's it's wonderful and humorous to watch. And that's something I research every year to try to also do some containers with like companion herbs as well. So it's just a fun way to ensure that there's a little bit of harmony in the garden and try to get the most out of my crops.
Does that work just because they require similar nutrients?
Yeah. So what I've discovered upon researching is there's a compatibility with the nutrients that are required and not required by the plants. There's also a compatibility with the repellents of pests, both bugs and like furry pests. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a helpful like way to sustain your garden without adding more chemicals as well.
Very cool. Liz, what are your gardening bona fides?
Okay. Well, I come from kind of a different place. I started in gardening out of necessity almost. I had purchased a home. It's a brand new home, and the yard was virtually clay soil. Very common practice, I guess, right now is builders go in, they build a new home. Before they build, they scoop up all the topsoil and they sell it. And then you move into the home, and right before you move in, they put about 2 inches down of topsoil, and that's what you have to work with. So I was in this area, I was in Arlington Heights, and the ground was terrible. The clay was terrible. So I had really done very little gardening, maybe when I was young, really like a child with my mom a little bit, until that experience. And like Elizabeth, I researched. I was like, okay, what do I do with clay soil? And there wasn't a plant in the yard because it was a brand new home, other than weeds. Of course, there are lots of weeds. So that's where I started. And I have not concentrated on food as much as I have on flowers.
Okay.
I've also, because of that first experience, I did things with shrubs and trees as well. But I love flowers. So that's kind of my forte, if you will, is flower gardening more than the other. And flower gardening in this area.
Okay. How big of a garden do you have?
Well, it's changed. I no longer live where I did, where I had the big garden. I moved from there. I actually lived in downtown Chicago for a number of years, actually a lot of years. And I transformed from gardening outside in suburbia to gardening on a balcony in downtown Chicago, which was really different and very fun. To me, the key to container gardening, two things. One is know what will work with the sunlight you have and what you're willing to work with. And the other is big pots. Little pots have to be watered every day. And who wants to go out and water every day? So it's like the bigger the pot, you can put all kinds of different plants into one pot. The bigger the pot, the better off you are. So I had big pots out there. And it was really fun. I lived on the 14th floor, and you could see my flowers from ground floor.
Wow.
So that was it was really quite fun. It was a big balcony, which was great. And now I'm living in a place where my garden is... Oh, I'm trying to think square footage-wise. It's just a little corner of a backyard because I'm renting, and it's probably, I don't know how to describe it. It's just a little bit of a border. There's a corner, and it's just a little bit of a border that I've kind of carved out and tried to make something out of. So different experiences.
Interesting. Yeah, I think there's probably a lesson in that for folks such as myself who thought, you know, I live in an apartment. Where could you possibly plant anything? If there's a will, there's a way. There's definitely a way to use your space.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the things I learned in balcony gardening was to do things that were vertical. So I had a little shelf unit I got somewhere for almost nothing that was just against a wall. And I did plants up and down that shelving unit so that I had lots of greenery everywhere. So I would go out there and I'd be like surrounded by this greenery in the middle of downtown Chicago, which was very fun.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah.
I've seen people use pallets, put them up on there, and they grow their containers out of the pallets.
Yep, that works. Yeah. That works. There's some really cool ways to do things. I mean, one of the resources that's been consistent for me with gardening, books are amazing. The internet's become more of a resource than it used to be. You have to watch out what your sources are and look for people who know what they're doing, of course. Books have been great. One of the greatest local resources we have, as far as I'm concerned, is the Chicago Botanic Garden. They are just amazing. And what's great about them is that they're growing things in our climate and with the pests that we have in this area. So when you get information from there, they have a website that's pretty good, and you can go. You can actually take classes at the Botanic Garden, which is kind of cool. I found them extremely helpful. You can also go and just look at what they do.
Yeah.
You know, it's really fun. They do a lot of fruits and vegetables as well. They have different techniques that they use. But with flowers and bushes and flowers and shrubs, I should say, and trees and such, you can actually go and see what something looks like, which is extremely helpful if you're new to gardening.
So you mentioned, Elizabeth, you mentioned tomatoes and cucumbers as being the stepping stones for, which I think I'm still at, you know, food gardening. But for flowers, what would be, if someone's looking to gain entry into the flower mainstream, what would be your recommendation for starting off?
What I would say to somebody first off is maybe the easiest thing to do is get a big container and start that way. You know, a big pot, because if you get a container, you can control the soil conditions very easily by buying, I wouldn't buy topsoil. There are soilless mixes that go into pots. That's what I would do. That's what I did and what I would continue to do because they don't compact as badly. So I would say start out with a big pot. And when I say big, I mean something that's maybe a couple feet in diameter and a couple feet off the ground that hopefully you won't have to water more than once a week. In terms of type of plant, I mean, the very easiest might be annuals. I mean, they'll give you the biggest show right away, you know, and you can go to any garden center and just do annuals. There's also some wonderful perennials out there. My way of buying plants, like when I go to buy annuals, for example, I look at what looks good. I'm looking for things that look green and healthy rather than wilted. I don't want anything that looks like a bug's been eating it or like it might have some disease. I'm looking for something that looks healthy. And then I do my research, too. Make sure it's something that fits your conditions, right? Like my balcony, for example, was very shady. So impatiens are one flower that does pretty well in shade, and begonias do well in shade. Marigolds, I think, are more of a sun-loving annual. I wouldn't plant marigolds on my balcony. They probably wouldn't have done well. So a lot depends upon your conditions in terms of where to start.
Okay.
Joel, what are your experiences with gardening?
Oh, mainly as an assistant to others. My mom is an avid gardener, and one time I just asked her, I was like, you know, I know I had a, you know, I had some twists and turns through my growing up years. And I asked her, like, you know, it must have been really stressful. How did you deal with that? And she said, oh, I gardened. And we had like just an amazing, we had gardens everywhere at my house. We had like a 3/4 acre growing up in Pennsylvania. I didn't know what that said about me, because if the gardens look so great and she tended to them so much, probably to alleviate her stress. But, you know, she was always, you know, doing things. And so I learned that way. And then I would assist family friends with their gardens. And, you know, that's how I learned, okay, when you we were transferring plants and you take them out of the garden and then you put them somewhere else. And before you put the plant in there, you have to put in the bone meal and the peat moss. And I always saw it happen. I just never remembered the order. And then we would plant that and make sure. And then now that I have a home, fast forward years later, I have a home. And of course, when you get land, you want to be able to, as you said, Liz, to make your grass grow. Right now we're having an issue with some parts of our yard, you know, that we had cinch bugs, and it's just, it's a nightmare. But, you know, other parts where you have land, you want to make it nice. You want to, you know, develop it and customize it and make it your own. My wife is mainly the gardener, the two of us, but the cycle of gardening is great. This time of year in the spring, it's wonderful and you're excited and you plan, you know, planning your garden for one, I've learned is, you know, one thing you have to do before you even go into the store, sit down with a pencil and paper and talk about where you want to put where. But then at the same time, you go and you get the plants and they grow and they bloom and the vegetables happen. But then summer hits and it's like you have to keep watering and you have to keep, you know, yeah. It's just like, oh, my gosh, it's such a commitment.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at. Like, I love it, but I'm in the sprint. I don't know if I'm in the marathon stage of gardening.
Right.
So and then in October, you cut everything back. I don't know what you need to cut back, what you don't. And luckily, my wife and then her aunt is just a master gardener. And so we often take pictures and send and ask her. And I have the interest, but I don't have the know-how.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of acquire it as I go, maybe. We have a lilac tree out front, a small lilac tree, because we had to cut down a crabapple tree that just dropped crabapples everywhere. And it was a nice tree, but it was just untenable with all the fruit dropping and all the wasps. Wasps and young kids don't mix very well.
Right.
We cut down that tree, and then I wanted to replace it, and they told you not to replace it with another tree, like on the top of the ground stump of the first one, but it was such a prime location. I just like planted this young lilac tree and just hoped. And so far, it looks like it's doing okay. I planted like a couple feet off, but I was moving a couch out of my house over the winter, and I accidentally dropped it, and it knocked a branch off this young tree. And I felt terrible, like, oh, no. So I figured, you know what? Let me just stick it in a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
And it is blossoming.
It's budding. I love it.
Now it's been in there for a while. So I now obviously have to put it back into soil.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know. Again, it's almost like a thing of faith. Like, okay, we'll see if this works.
Yeah.
You know, and see if it's happy or not. And so that's kind of like my experience. It's just gardening on faith.
There you go. It's good.
Charlie?
I'm with you. I usually work as an assistant to someone who has more experience and knowledge. Like a lot of you here, my mom did a lot of gardening while I was growing up. Of course, she was probably doing it to get away from me or, you know, to deal with the stress of a rambunctious son. By the time I was old enough to consider growing my own anything, I was in an apartment in Chicago, and I thought, well, I'm surrounded by concrete. There's barely any trees anywhere. What hope could I have to, you know, start a rose garden or something? But of course, a couple years back, I moved to a house in Des Plaines, and suddenly there's this wonderful backyard of untapped potential.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple summers, we just sort of looked out at the backyard and said, it would be nice to do something with that someday. And then we didn't. But of course, last year, because we were working from home, there was that much more time to actually start planting things and seeing what would happen. So my partner started doing some like succulents. For about an 8-month span, there was a fledgling avocado tree plant inspired by this book. We don't have it here at the library because it is very out of date. I think it was published originally in 1965, but it's a book called The Avocado Pit Grower's Indoor Guide or something like that by Hazel Perper.
Yeah.
If you're interested in it, you can find it for free on archive.org, there are used copies on Amazon between $9 and $590. Don't pay $590 for this. Basically, all you need to grow an avocado tree is an avocado pit. You stick toothpicks in it and sort of suspend it in a glass of water, warm water. After a couple weeks, it starts to grow like roots and shoots out of either side of it. And then once it's viable, then you can plant it in the ground or plant it in soil. We didn't make it that far. Unfortunately, the cold snap back in February pretty much killed everything that was living. So we're kind of back to square one at this point, but now we sort of know how to use what we have available to us. And the other thing that I've been sort of tasked with starting is a compost heap.
Oh, yeah.
For a long time, it just seemed like I'm just throwing my leftovers in the backyard. I can't possibly be doing this right. This just kind of feels like I'm hoarding coffee grounds. And so I, as a lot of you did, I went to the library and I checked out the books that seemed to be on my wavelength, to wit, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Composting and Composting for Dummies. We have more books that don't second-guess your intellect in the title, including the wonderfully named Worms Eat My Garbage. But I figured, Complete Idiot, that's more or less the level that I'm at. And what I learned is that there's not really a bad way to compost. What I'm doing is sort of cold composting. It requires a lot of patience. I think you need a year or so before you get anything usable. You can do hot composting. That involves introducing some worms to process what you have there. You have to turn it with a stick and make sure that it is getting enough oxygen and all that. But do any of you compost? And do you have any tips about it?
I have in the past. I am not doing that right now, but I have in the past. And I found it was amazing. When I did this, well, this was many years ago, and my next door neighbor was alarmed because I was throwing my garbage out to the side of my house, and you know, and she was like, it's going to smell and it's going to be terrible. And I'm like, don't know. So I did hot composting. I had to add some kind of powder, I want to say it was. Okay. And I don't remember what exactly it was, but I added something and I had to flip it over every so often. And it was wonderful. It was just the best. That was the time I was working with a really heavily clay soil. And I found that adding compost to that soil made a huge difference in what I was able to grow and what was going on. I can't, my husband at the time was, used to find me hysterical. I mean, the day that I walked into the house, just elated because I had a worm. I'm like, they're worms, they're worms. It was like the most exciting day for me because it meant that the soil was actually living.
Right.
Finally, and it had been, it was so heavily clay. I mean, it was ridiculous. So, yeah, and I couldn't say enough good about it. Not only did it help that way, but my neighbor who was so concerned came to me about 6 months after I started this, and she said, it doesn't smell at all. I'm like, yeah, it doesn't. You know, if it does have an odor, it's not a bad one.
Right.
You know, it smells like earth, if anything. And so that was really good. Good experience.
Okay. I definitely had that thought when my landlord came over to mow the lawn, and I thought, she's going to think that I am doing some weird science experiment. Or So I think that that's maybe why I didn't start it sooner, just the fear that it's a weird thing to do, but, you know,
it's great.
Yeah. I think there's like a lack of understanding of what composting is and what it could do for the environment and for sustainability as a whole. And that's a big part of the misunderstanding is the, oh, it'll smell. Oh, nobody knows how to do it right. Oh, it'll attract vermin. It'll do this. It'll do that. And really, if people were taught how to do it properly and had the tools, it could be a really amazing way for people to have that ability to have great gardens and to have healthy lawns and to have all of these ways to take care of the outside world around them instead of just using chemicals, because it really does help to create, like you said, Liz, a healthy soil instead of just trying to basically, as you found out, there is a whole lot of clay soil in this area, and it's awful to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having to go and get a chemically treated soil or put a bunch of gunk in there or whatever, like natural compost is just an amazing tool for bringing that health back to your garden, to your lawn, all those aspects, and to try to get that healthy looking plant life growing again.
So when you say natural compost, are we talking coffee grounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that nitrogen that it adds?
It adds, and I'm not sure of all the science. I know what it did was it added ultimately worms. It added biotics of various sorts so worms would eat it. And what worms do to clay soil is they break it up.
Good.
So clay soil, I mean, is like Play-Doh,
right,
except worse,
sure,
you know, right? So what it does is it breaks it up and it makes it so that your plant's roots will go into the ground rather than going over the ground.
Hmm.
One of the problems we have if you see trees that get knocked down in this area during storms, you'll notice the root systems are usually extremely shallow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we have this terrible clay soil.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have this soil that's been amended with compost, it's porous and more water can get into it and tree roots and plant roots can get into it. So it's really, really good that way. I don't know the science.
And
maybe Elizabeth does.
If the water can go into the soil and that's what the roots reach for. And so like Liz was saying, like if the water lays on top of the soil, the roots are going to reach for the water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you want the soil to be, you know, as far down as possible to be broken up and have that airy quality. Yeah,
right.
I'm not big with the science words. But yeah, I'd say it's, yeah, there's nitrogen. The worms I know are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I always talk to my worms, you're about to... Everybody's laughing at me.
No, it's good. We're laughing with you.
You're all going to be like, oh, wow, this children's library lady is... I always, when I meet my worms in the spring as I'm tending to my garden, I say, hello, worms. Thank you for aerating my soil. Because they are. They are there to make it work better. And so, yeah, they get in there and the compost, it's all working together. And that's the thing. Those roots need to go down toward... They need to follow gravity inward and not outward.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then also, yeah, like the chemical components and everything that are natural instead of like, you know,
fertilizer.
Factory.
Yeah.
So when we talk about composting, like what beyond coffee grounds, like I'm thinking banana peels,
mm-hmm,
right? Like what else would you put?
I'm trying to remember. Not meat. I remember that.
Yeah, nothing animal products.
No animal products. I think there might have been some vegetables and fruit things you weren't supposed to do. You probably know more, Charlie, if you've been doing
reading.
Yeah,
I think onions are bad.
Okay.
But, yeah, potatoes, apple cores.
Right.
You know,
leaves and grass.
Yeah.
I use grass. I had to put special stuff in. And it wasn't chemical. It was organically based. But special stuff in when I use grass because it's so heavy in nitrogen or whatever. Mm-hmm. You have to put special stuff in when you did the grass or you did then. Yeah, that works. Right.
I recently learned dryer lint is a good source.
Well, cotton, if it's cotton.
Mm, yeah.
It's interesting, though, because you'd have polyester, too, but whatever.
Shredded paper, within reason. You know, don't put an entire newspaper in there, but having a little paper is a good thing.
Right. Hmm. I seem to remember orange peels. Mm. Again, I'm. This is a long time ago. I seem to remember orange peels. Pretty much anything fruit or vegetable, like, you know, the ends of tomatoes or a half-rotten tomato or a lettuce or fruit, you know, fruit remains were pretty much fair game.
Right.
Yeah.
And it seems like, in retrospect, before I started composting, maybe a third to half of what I threw in a landfill could have been composted.
Mm-hmm.
So it just feels like a smart thing to do, to cut in half my weekly garbage pickup and to also be doing something beneficial in my backyard with that.
Right. Pine boughs were big.
Mm.
Like your Christmas tree, if you get a live Christmas tree, those are great in the garden for a number of reasons. I don't know if Elizabeth has used these, but I use them. I had some evergreen trees in my yard, and they were very susceptible to our freeze-thaw thing. And so if you take your Christmas tree, I used to go to nurseries and pick up their old Christmas trees. I mean, that's how crazy I was about this. And I would put them at the base of my evergreens and my susceptible things, and they put acid into the soil, which evergreens like.
Mm-hmm.
and they protect those roots from the freeze and thaw that we get here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. In a lot of places, like up in Minnesota, for example, at least years ago, they had reliable snow cover. So that would insulate tree roots. Mm-hmm. But here we get this freeze-thaw business, which is very, very hard, especially on young plants, young shrubs and trees, and even perennials. And you put those pine boughs down, and it helps insulate. And fabulous. And it amends the soil as well. And then when you're done, you can put it in your compost pile.
Yeah.
Very green.
So that actually brings up something I also wanted to ask, if we could step away from composting for a second. We've recently had some very cold weather. You know, it's been freeze advisories. And I brought in the kids wanted to grow tomatoes, peppers, and also I had a jalapeno pepper. And I was like, oh, I'm growing salsa right now.
Yeah.
But I brought those in. I put them into a Rubbermaid container, brought them into the house. And I've seen other, like throughout the neighborhood, people have put like, you know, blankets over there coming into work today and displaying to us some blankets on some plants and stuff like that. How much does that help with the heat retention against the freeze advisory?
So I'm very cautious. I haven't even planted my stuff yet because according to the website I use, it's not time yet, but I will soon. Like I usually wait till Mother's Day. American Mother's Day. So we're coming up on it. But I knew there was another cold snap coming, and I just said to myself, just wait, there's no hurry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
But what I've read is what's harmful are the fast freezes. The slow roll of a freeze is usually more, the plant can handle it better, I guess, because it's not so like jarring. If it's like one of those quick fronts that moves through, that does more damage to everything.
Okay.
So hopefully this one we just had, because it kind of rolled in over a few days and it's kind of just rolling out, I think. You know, it's good that people protected their plants because it's a lot of young plants. But, you know, once again, I'm not a botanist or anything, but like I don't think anybody's going to have a huge amount of lasting damage on their garden.
Okay.
Right. I would just add to that that one of the things that I am crazy about when I'm doing plants in the ground as opposed to containers is mulch. Mm. Mulch is key. And I don't mean stones and I don't mean plastic bark. I mean, real honest to goodness, wood bark mulch is absolutely fabulous. I put in the fall a layer of probably 3 inches of mulch in this garden that I did. I did mostly perennials. And my garden came up much slower this year than other gardens that weren't mulch that are very close by, even in the same yard. But I'm really happy it did because of this freeze that's going on now. My plants are just like this big, and they're not going to be affected. Hmm. I haven't been affected by a freeze, but a plant that's this big could be. You could lose some of the flowers or whatever. So I'm really a proponent of mulch for a number of reasons, and that's one, is the freeze-thaw business.
Okay. So I had one more question about composting, and then we can possibly move on. But container, like just a pile in the yard, or I've seen tumblers where people put them and you just kind of like turn it every now and then. Like, are there any recommendations that you would have?
Well, I can't have, in my neighborhood, we can't have a compost anything. So right now I don't. I know that when I lived in a more rural area down by like with my parents, they had used wooden stakes and put like chicken wire around it and just built that up. And then my dad would go out with a big stick and just kind of toss it every once in a while. But that is very like rudimentary and can possibly have more friends than just worms in it. But I know there are the
tumblers.
The tumblers, yeah. Those look pretty nifty.
Yeah.
I had a box that was made out of pine done by somebody who was just handy with wood, and it was just pine with slats, and it worked beautifully. Okay. I mean, it was just not a problem. It wasn't unsightly. It kept everything in place. It was maybe 3 feet high and 2.5 or maybe 3 feet, 3 feet by 3 feet, and it was perfect. It was perfect.
And mine started out as just garbage on the ground. But we recently upgraded to a container purchased from the popular gardening store, Dollar Store.
Okay. there you go.
So just a plastic Tupperware. We drilled 6 holes in the top of it for airflow, but Yeah, it seems to be working, so.
Awesome.
So you don't need to break the bank.
Does anyone have any spectacular fails at gardening that might encourage people to move past?
I have a good story, and my one of my youth services coworkers thinks this is hilarious because she was just reminding me that I have to tell this as I was coming downstairs. When I first moved in with my husband before we got married, I was buying plants, and I bought an unlabeled plant that was right next to another tomato plant. So I thought I was buying tomato plants. I did buy one tomato plant. The other one didn't have a lot of leaves on it, and I didn't realize that it was catnip. And it got quite large. And I don't know if everybody knows, but catnip is in the mint family, and mint is super invasive. And so this plant has come back every year for like 4 years now. I think it finally died last year when we had a really bad freeze. But I would not put it past this evil plant to come back again. And it gets like so big, and it's the most obnoxious plant, and neighborhood cats like it.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if you do have cats.
I don't have cats. There are, you know, some little wandering, friendly neighborhood cats that like our backyard, which is fine, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's one of my favorite gardening fails because it's kind of like, how did I not know I wasn't buying a tomato plant, you might ask, but I didn't know I wasn't buying a tomato plant.
Right.
Don't feel bad. You're going to make mistakes. I've had things happen where like I thought I was, you know, by our front door. It's just really hard to get things to grow. So I'll be like, oh, I'm going to make this really pretty. And it'll last like 2 weeks. And then everything dies. And it's not because I didn't try. It's just that like nothing wants to work in that one section. Mm-hmm. And my mother-in-law keeps telling me to just put fake flowers out there because she's like, it's not your fault. It's not working. She's like, some places just don't have the, you know, like whatever's going on there, there's something that doesn't want those flowers to thrive. So I say just try and laugh at your mistakes because yeah. They are funny because sometimes your tomato plant turns out to be catnip.
I have drowned plants. So I would say, and again, I've been talking about containers sometimes. If you use containers, don't do what I did the first time, which is get a container that doesn't have draining holes in it. Mm-hmm. Definitely, you want your containers to have drainage holes. Number one, it makes it, you can know then when you water a plant, you'll know when it's full because mm-hmm. it'll start coming out the bottom.
Right.
So you'll know that it has enough, when it has enough water, and it will never have too much because it'll come out the bottom. So that's probably the biggest. And the other would be, to watch, I think Elizabeth kind of alluded to this too, watch what you're buying. I mm-hmm. mean, I haven't done it because it's a mistake that drives me so crazy when I see it. You know, you go to the nursery and you see a little shrub or a little tree and you say, oh, isn't this cute? I'm going to buy it. I'm going to put it in this little space. And it turns out this thing that you thought was going to be so cute and little ends up being 35 feet high mm-hmm. and 20 feet wide.
Sure.
I mean, do your research. If the nursery doesn't have a label that tells you exactly what the plant's going to be, I would say don't buy it.
Okay.
Just don't buy it because, especially if it's something that's more than $5, you know, mm-hmm. if it's a shrub or a tree.
But Liz, it said tomato on it.
Oh, and what I would say about the catnip, speaking of such things, if you want to grow catnip, put it in a container. That's one of the joys of a container.
I don't want to grow you don't that want catnip.
You don't want that catnip. I totally get it.
The neighborhood cats would like you to continue growing catnip.
Yes, yes. So if somebody must have catnip, the advice I would give is put it in a container because it will be contained by definition, right?
I remember having a ton of mint around our back deck in Pennsylvania. And we would actually cut it down and boil it and add a little sugar and have mint tea.
That sounds good.
In the summer. It was very, very good.
It's hard to kill mint. So, like, that's one where, honestly, if you are nervous about, like, starting, like, herbs or anything, or, you know, you want to start somewhere with that, mint, but put it in a container because you will. I mean, if you kill mint, you might want to think about a new hobby.
See, that's the thing. Whenever we see mint in the wild, my wife reacts to it like a dragon slayer, you know, like, okay, we gotta do this. And here I am with my fond childhood memories of mint tea. I'm like, oh, it's okay. We can just let it go. And that might explain now why we just have these differing views of it. So maybe if I put it into a container, it would be a nice compromise. But yeah.
Less invasive.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing is too, you know, gardening is fraught possibly with failure, but also with success. But maybe another, don't throw too much money into it. You know, start smaller. There's so many things you can grow very cheaply. So that's something else that I think maybe might be a takeaway.
Yeah. Yep. You alluded to something earlier, Joel, about planning. That's another bugaboo of mine. I really am into planning. Why would you spend hundreds of dollars potentially, maybe even thousands, maybe even tens of thousands, and not plan first and figure out what it's going to look like? And, you know, you can take a piece of graph paper and figure out what your yard is or what the plot is that you're looking at. And then you can go to books or to the internet, you know, whatever reliable source, and get information about the plants, figure out what you want that to look like. If you want shrubs or you want flowers or you want a vegetable garden, figure out what's needed and put it on paper first. Because if you're going to make a mistake, that's the place to make it, is on paper. It doesn't cost anything except a little time. Whereas if you go and you think, oh, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy 5 bushes, and you don't know what they are and what they do, and then suddenly you have these bushes in your yards that may be invasive, or they may be bushes that needed sun and you put them in shade. I mean, you just don't want to end up like that. So planning to me is just key.
Right.
Really, really important.
And pay attention to sun patterns.
Yes.
And drainage.
Yes.
In your property.
There is an old adage that all a weed is a plant where you don't want it, right? And I believe in that. I think that's true. But I think there's another, and I don't know what the exact wording would be that I would put in this, but if there is a spot in your garden that has a problem, it's very shady, it's very wet, it's very dry, it's too sunny, whatever it may be, there is probably a plant, or certainly a group of plants, that will do very well there. It's just a matter of finding them. You just have to find out what that is.
And so you need to do some research, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. What would be a wonderful resource to people who are looking for books or other things on gardening?
I can't imagine. I can't imagine. We have a very nice gardening section here at the library, right?
We do. I know that being in the children's library, there are books there on gardening, so that when the even the littlest child comes to us, we have some books to get them started. Because I know when I was little, I used to follow my adults around and ask them, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? That's probably how I ended up with books all the time, because my dad likes to make me figure it out myself, because that's how my mind works. And so I brought some books that I found interesting. I looked for a few. And the reason I liked the books that I picked out to tell everyone about is because these do not talk down. And that's the thing. So they don't talk down to the kid, and they don't talk down to the adults. Adults, you can ask for kids' books. If you're starting out gardening, what you need are straight, easy answers that tell you what to do without confusing you, because you don't, as we were talking about, you don't want to waste money. You want to make your plan and go out and do what's right for your space you're using. And then you want to like just get your garden started. And if you don't find that the books from the adult section or the resources you're finding are helping you, maybe a book from the kids section is great. And if you have a kid and you want to start them on gardening, and you want to let them look at a book, or they're asking questions, why does this work this way and why does this work that way? We have a great garden section, so please come ask, because if you come and ask me, I will just get so excited and walk them over there, and then I will talk to them, and any of our librarians will get super excited, because we do love to help little minds explore. But one of the first ones I found was the Usborne Book of Growing Food. And this one I really liked, because I loved that one of the first things it talks about is the tools you need. And also it talks about like soil safety, why you need certain equipment and stuff like that, because that's the stuff that kids ask. So I just really liked that, because even before you get started, when you tell kids like, oh, we're going to get gardening gloves out and we're, you know, Why?
Yeah,
why?
Yeah, right.
So, you know, you want to have a short, good answer. And that I liked that it just started with that. And so you have an answer instead of having to, like, you know, elaborate and be like, well, because I've always used gloves. I don't know. And then the other thing I found was a series by Renata Fossen Brown called Gardening Lab for Kids that has different experiments, and they're called experiments in all the books, but Joel's getting really excited.
He's like, these are
and it's got like theme gardening and starting a garden and garden art. And I just thought they looked really fun. And when I started to flip through them, I thought they looked really exciting because they have projects that can either enhance your garden or get you started on doing something fun in the garden. This one is one of my favorites, making like little trolls in a pot that have little grass hair growing out the top of them. I saw in one of them, there was to make this like spiral with bricks and then plants in it. And I just thought it was so pretty. And I thought, you know, if a kid did that and put that in your yard and then grew that in the garden. Yeah, you found it, Liz, the herb spiral. How amazing would it feel to have done that as a family project and then to be able to walk out into your yard and show people and say, I did that, you know, and then you could change every year. You could plant something new in there and it would just be a really fun project. And then there's also fun craft projects that are garden related. So I thought these books were fun. So again, the series is called Gardening Lab for Kids by Renata Fossen Brown.
Cool. I would add, in terms of books, if you're doing flower gardening, you're looking for inspiration because you can go flower gardening, you can go in so many different directions. You can go with colors and playing with colors. You can do scents. You can do various types of foliage. I mean, whatever you want to do. There's some wonderful, wonderful books. There's always wonderful books about how to kind of put together some of the artsy, what a garden would look like and how to group things and that kind of thing. And there, I can't give you one particular book. I think there's just so, so many. I would caution you, if you're looking for particular plants, I would be cautious about the date of a book because plants are changing. I assume this is true with fruits and vegetables as well. Plants are changing all the time. There's all kinds of new varieties and cultivars coming out. If a book is published in 1965, you might find that the plants that are discussed in there no longer exist, or there have been updates to those plants, things that are better suited for this environment. So be cautious about books that are just talking about, oh, this plant is wonderful. It may not be wonderful in the Chicago area. It may not be wonderful in the shade. And it may be an old book that just isn't up to date. So be careful about that.
Actually, I wanted to ask a question about that. Is an avocado tree viable in Illinois?
Well, I can't speak from experience. The author of the book was in an apartment in New York City, so I assume that it's something that you can do indoors, but I think that avocado trees are native to warmer climates.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
And that's something else we haven't touched on this at all. Maybe not as applicable to vegetable and herb gardening, but when you're dealing with trees and shrubs and flowers, the United States and all the world actually is divided into zones. We are in this area, zone 5. In Chicago and the city, it borders on zone 5B. It's a little bit warmer in the city than it is here. And right along the lakefront, it tends to be a little bit warmer. And where we are northwest of the city by 20, 30 miles, it tends to be more 5A. But I caution you against, I mean, certainly you can purchase plants that are only good in zone 6. 6 is south of us, and zone 4 is north of us. So if you buy a plant that's good in zone 4, that's fine for Chicago. But if you buy a plant that says zone 6, watch it, because it might not last through our winters.
And this actually is applicable to fruits and vegetables and herbs. Some stuff just won't grow in the wrong climate, or it won't germinate. The timing won't be right. So it just might not happen at all because our seasons aren't the right time span.
Right.
So it is applicable to your food gardening.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And I guess the other thing that I'm thinking we haven't really touched on either is to be careful. We talked about doing research. Be careful about planting invasive plants. There are websites out there that tell you what plants are invasive. Mint might be one of them. There are vines. You might see them in your neighbor's yard and think, oh, they're just beautiful. But if you plant them, you'll never get rid of them. Hmm. So before you decide, I'm going to cover my fence in XYZ plant, make sure it isn't an invasive species. Now, that being said, there might be, for example, there are some honeysuckle vines that are wonderful and non-invasive, and there are some honeysuckle vines that are invasive. So you have to be very specific. Whatever you're buying, make sure you know exactly what it is. Get the exact name. It might have three or four different Latin names after it. Check it before you buy it and make sure it's not an invasive species, because that is a nightmare. It's so hard to get rid of something you don't want.
Check it in case you might wreck it, right. Being your garden, right?
Yes, so. Yes, yes. You don't want your garden taken over by whatever it may be. Sure, I mean, if right. I see it in lawns, you see Creeping Charlie, for example, in lawns, and there's other plants. There's some grasses, some ornamental grasses that are invasive, and there are some vines, and there are some ground covers that are invasive. You just have to be really careful.
Well, my experience, grass clippings are invasive because I trim the yard, right? And then I get some grass clippings into the garden, and so some grass yes. starts coming up in the garden, and you yes. have to weed your grass out of the garden.
Yeah. That's another plus, by the way, of mulch. Mulch helps reduce weeds. Mm-hmm. It's another biggie. Really makes a big difference because the seeds, I don't know what exactly happens, but the seeds, I guess, don't germinate until they get to soil, a lot of weed seeds. And if you have 2 or 3 inches of mulch, the seeds never get down into the soil, so they don't. And if they do start to germinate, they're germinating very loosely in this mulch, and you just pick them out and they're over. So that's another plus.
And it sounds like another takeaway is that this is something that requires a lot of patience.
Yes.
If you plant something, it's not going to come up the next day. I think that that's probably one of the things that has been just a mental block. I don't know if I've done this correctly because I have to wait so long to
mm-hmm.
see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when something does come up, then it's that much more satisfying. Do you have any advice for an impatient gardener?
Don't keep messing with your plant you're waiting for.
Hmm.
Just follow the watering instructions. Don't keep touching it. And, you know, don't be like, well, maybe it's not in the right light, and then keep mm-hmm. moving it or whatever. But here's the thing. Like, you have to trust that you made the right decision when you put it in the right sunlight and you put it in the right container. Because if you really are planting it from a seed and you're waiting for it to grow, mm-hmm. once you plant it and start watering it and you give it a couple weeks and you're waiting for that, those roots are starting. Even if you can't see under the soil, if you can't see anything coming up, stuff's happening under.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you keep messing around and changing its environment, that's when you're not going to get results.
I see.
Yeah, I think the word patience just applies. Mm-hmm. You know, just be patient. If you do your research, you should kind of know. For example, if you want to see daffodils in the spring, you should know that you don't plant daffodils in the spring. You plant them in the fall,
mm-hmm.
and then you let them winter, and then they come up in the spring.
Tulips too, right?
Tulips are the yeah. same way, right? I've never tried planting them in the spring. That might work, but you're just going to have to wait till the next spring mm-hmm. to see them. So may as well wait and, you know, plant them in the fall, which is when they're happiest going into the ground, and then be patient. One of the things that can happen happens a lot with bulbs. It happens with other types of perennials, perennials being the kinds of flowers that come back every year. Annuals are the flowers, at least in this area, when we plant them, they're good for one summer. They bloom most of the season, and then at the end, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually do not come back. Okay, now there are exceptions to every rule, and I won't get real technical about biennials and how that works and whatever. We'll just say there are certain plants that in Chicago act that way. Others, you plant them, and they come back every year.
Mm-hmm.
With your annuals, that's impatient gardener stuff, right? Because mm-hmm. you buy them at the nursery. I don't plant before Mother's Day in this area either. I think Mother's Day, American Mother's Day this year, May 9, is the earliest that I would plant my annuals. You know, you'll get instant results. You put them in the ground, they're already flowering, and if they're in the right place and you keep them watered and they're happy, they'll flower all, you know, most of the summer. Perennials, you have to have a little more patience. It takes a little bit longer for them to establish themselves. The first year you plant them, they might be a little small. They might not look real healthy. Sometimes it takes several years for them to come and really be fully what they will be.
So it's not an activity for someone hoping for instant gratification.
If you're more leaning in that direction, I would say get some containers, put holes in the bottom, get some non-soil mix to throw in your container, and buy some annuals. And you'll be very happy because you'll have instant results right then.
So there's a plant out there for everybody is what I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Would you?
Yeah. 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 I mean, there's even, you know, a vegetable out there for everybody.
Because some vegetables are easier to grow than others,
yeah.
Right?
And you can buy tomato plants that are already well on their way and other veggies. There's some stuff that's harder to grow. If you find yourself on the more impatient end of the gardening spectrum, you should probably like give yourself a year or two of trying the easier stuff before you delve in further. But there's no reason not to give it a try and not to, you know, tell yourself that maybe, you know, this year you take it easy and you just, you give yourself a little grace and let yourself try something that's a little further along.
Another topic I think we could bring into, we've alluded to some animals, you know, cats, for instance, right?
Yes.
But, you know, animals eat plants.
Yes, some.
And some rather voraciously.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some animal preventatives maybe that you have, some experiences you might be able to pass on?
So I'm going to start this with the truth that I am a very big softy toward everything, every animal. I usually just put up like net type fencing just because you have to try something if you don't want everything to tear apart your garden. Because I think bunnies are the biggest culprit usually, at least in my area. But there are some very clever chipmunks that can be little scoundrels, and squirrels as well. But yeah, I'd say the big ones are bunnies. The thing I've learned and that my husband tells me continuously as he helps me stretch all that fencing out is that they're going to get in there, unless you're Mr. McGreeley from Muncha, 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 the children's book by Candace Fleming. You're not going to build a fortress around it, and they're going to get in there. And so you do your best. And I had a friend who always said, just basically plant enough so there's enough for everyone. I mean, there's a ton of food usually on those plants, but if it really drives you crazy, you're probably the kind of gardener who's going to figure out the fencing to fix your
pretty
woes.
Quick, yeah.
Yeah. But for me, it's I get excited when I see animals in my yard. So I'm usually like, oh, it's a pony. And then I'm just like standing there all like thrilled. And if you know me, you know me. but yeah, I think one of my favorite stories, though, was when I was at my grandma's and she had a tomato bush on her back patio, and we kept finding tomatoes that had been pulled off of it and set down on her patio table, like partially chewed. And we were like, what is happening? And finally, one morning, she looks out there, and this sneaky little chipmunk was pulling them off, and it wouldn't eat the whole thing. It would just take like a couple bites and then just leave it there so we could find it. Like that
a
little stinker.
Card.
Yeah.
You know, I've been here.
Like, hey, lady, I like your tomatoes, but not enough to eat the whole thing.
They can certainly promote some emotions.
Oh, yeah. They can bring out that like guttural, like.
I've been yelling out the back door, and I see a hawk coming down chasing a squirrel, and I'm yelling, get him! Get him! So the words Fort Knox have been a verb in our household, as in, oh, I just Fort Knoxed the clematis.
There you go.
So
for flower gardening, you could take all kinds of different ways of looking at this. One of the joys of containers is it's tougher for animals to get at plants that are a container. So that's, again, another plus. If you are growing things in the ground, if you're growing bulbs, there are certain bulbs that are not attractive to animals, some that are poisonous. Now, rhubarb, I believe, the leaves of rhubarb are poisonous for humans and for most animals, so just as a FYI. But when it comes to bulbs, daffodils are poisonous. So that's a bulb that should not be generally eaten by rabbits or squirrels. Tulips are rabbit, that's like rabbit caviar, I swear. So watch out for the tulips. One thing you can do with bulbs, though, even tulips, and I have never done this, but I've read that you could actually when you plant your bulbs, you can do it separately, I guess. If you did bulbs like in a group, you could plant like a underground screened basket, right? It's like a basket of screens, so like a, or a box that had screening all the way around to put your bulbs in, screen the top and bury that whole thing, right? And that would keep the rabbits and the squirrels and everything else away from your bulbs. And if the holes were big enough, then the shoots of the plant should be able to come through and you'd be fine. So that's just a different, I just read that the other day. I thought, well, that's pretty clever. I've never tried that. Other than that, I'd say fencing. And or dogs. If you have a dog around, the scent of a dog will keep a lot of animals away.
I've also seen forks turned, if you stick forks around, of course, that affects the aesthetics of the garden,
yes,
right? You have plastic forks around your...
I just know, knowing myself, like gardener know thyself, that that's probably not a good idea for Elizabeth's garden.
Yeah.
or little flags stuck in.
At least I would see the flags before I stepped on them.
Yeah. And how are flags going to...
Well, the wind would move the flags.
Oh, and they'd
it
be
would
moving.
Scare the... They would flutter.
Yeah.
Scare them away. But then again, them being the most Machiavellian, evil, schemed brains that they are, they'll figure it out.
Yeah, most likely.
That moving thing has not moved towards me at all.
Right. Yeah.
So I can just ignore it.
Right.
And still eat Elizabeth's grandma's tomatoes and leave them on the back porch.
Now, there's been an attitude about squirrels where I am now, because the squirrels have not eaten most things. What they like to do is move things. They move things around, so it's like the gardening process. We started thinking it's going to look like this, but it changes because the squirrels do their thing, which is fine. Yeah, rearranging, you know, like some people like rearranging furniture. Squirrels apparently like rearranging bulbs, so kind of fun.
All right, is there anything anyone would like to add before we wrap it up?
Can't think of anything. It's been fun.
This has been fun.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of underlines, no matter how much experience you have, there's always something more to learn. We've definitely got a lot of resources here at the library. If you go up to the fourth floor, we have a display featuring an assortment of our gardening books. Joel, you also said that at the Des Plaines History Center, they've got an exhibit about the 90th anniversary of the Des Plaines Garden Club.
Yes, it's a very... broad display. If you're interested in that, go to the History Center and you can see much of its history, what it does, and I'm sure they have contact information if you're interested in joining. But that was something that was neat to see over there.
Well, that'll do it for this time. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll see you next time.